The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Welcome to Up on Taconic, a recurring podcast that explores the world of Taconic High School from students, staff, school programs, and all of the great things that happen here each day. And welcome to another episode of Up on Taconic. I'm Max, and I am joined by Finn.
Hello.
So, for our first segment today, let's throw it over to Avery, Aiden, and Dalton with the quarterly review.
Quarterly review, where we review the quarter and more.
I hate that pun.
Oh.
That's really mean.
Anyway.
It was my pun. I can say it if I want to.
Yeah, you did come up with the pun.
Oh, so that now that we're at the end of the quarter instead of the beginning, we are able to talk about it again. So just to recap, a few months ago, we talked about the start of our quarters and how the semester's going and sort of where we were at, and now it is the end of quarter three.
Good Lord!
Yep, we are recording this on the last week of quarter three, and we are...
Unk.
It was a journey.
We are unk.
Yeah. We are unk. We're all 17 now. I've obtained my seven. What? Yeah.
I don't know, just the way you worded that was really funny.
I've obtained my seven instead of six.
No!
Yeah.
Will throw this table at you.
Oh,
I will pick up this whole table and throw it at you.
Well, is that how the quarter got us feeling?
Yes.
That's fair.
Yes.
That's fair.
Quarter three has not been that bad.
Oh, damn. Well, I don't know about you, Dalton, but like, I think I'll start off a little bit. Quarter three is usually the hardest for me. Like, by far.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even close.
Usually I have a weird lull in my grades. Somehow didn't this quarter.
Yeah, like,
I've
definitely struggled a lot with my grades this quarter. At least, not, like, struggled, like, oh, no, I'm failing all my class. Like, I'm fine, generally. But, like, it's worse than it usually is.
Yeah.
And it sucks, because you just get a lot, I feel like you get a lot of assignments in quarter three, and it's really hard to keep up. And a lot of things going on in my life, personally, have also been happening. So it's, like, I have to manage that, and manage the quarter, and manage, like, everything, and it just, it's so bad because I just can't do my school.
I mean, then again, I also don't think our quarter three was helped by Miss Clegg evaporating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, she had a baby, so she went on maternity leave. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But that was an interesting.
I got some good news and bad news.
Three.
Good news is I'm having a kid. Bad news is,
the good news is there's a new baby. The bad news is there's no more Miss Clegg.
Yeah.
For like 8 weeks.
Yeah.
I think she'll be back in like June.
Why is it only ELA teachers, bro?
I don't know.
Like, it's only ELA teachers who are like, I'm pregnant in the middle of the year. It's like, I've never had another teacher be like,
I remember
congratulations,
like,
but like, why is it always the ones that love English?
I remember she like dropped that info. It was either in a D&D, like in
I
D&D
was
club,
out that day.
Or, no,
that's
no,
all
no.
I
it
know.
It was in class because you were out. And she's like, oh yeah, I'm pregnant. And we're like, oh, wait, what?
Yeah.
It like went over our heads and we're like, wait, you're pregnant?
And then like I came in after that and this guy was talking about, oh, the baby. I'm like, what baby? Where are you talking? Why are babies? No. You just said that on the podcast.
On the pod.
Flagging on the pod.
No.
But so yeah, that was happening over the quarter. So having loss of a teacher is a rough one. I mean, I've had that before, but like it's usually during quarter four, so it's like time to sit back and relax.
Well, for me, freshman year, it was like halfway through second quarter, my marketing teacher just
dipped.
Gone from the face of the earth.
Fun little side anecdote. My teacher, when I was at my old school, dipped halfway through the year because he was like, I'm retiring, but it'll be at the end of school year, so don't worry about it. And we were like, okay. I don't think it was at the end of the school year.
We didn't get anything about that. Also, our teacher looked like maybe in his 30s. the main theory was that he went to the Netherlands and just never came back. Like, he just moved abroad and didn't come back to the United States.
He was like, I'm good.
Because the last thing people heard about him was that he was going to the Netherlands. And then no one ever heard anything from him ever again.
Oh, darn. That's crazy. So back to Gorderly. Back to, like, our personal quarters. So since it wasn't so bad for you, Aiden, why wasn't it so bad for you, buddy boy?
Because my classes were basically the exact same, and I didn't have that weird lull that I've had, like, almost every other year since 7th grade-ish. For some reason, I just had this weird lull around quarter three where all my grades would just tank. But this year, surprisingly, didn't have that happen. All my grades have been pretty good.
Awesome sauce.
First quarter with Jim was fun. Yeah. I got to shoot bow.
I had Jim.
Archery
I shot
is
bow.
The best
the sauce.
Gym thing.
It's the sauce.
Hands down, at least in my opinion.
Archery is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Archery is very fun.
Although I did also like the badminton week.
I just can't
Badminton
aim.
Is pretty good.
Badminton's so fun when you're not playing with, I won't name names, but you know who you are, you bum, who, like, misses all his shots and doesn't freaking be good at badminton. He would spike it into our lane. Spike it on our side of the court, and I'd be like, bro.
At least your partner actually played.
What, do you have, like, Eli?
No, I had Finn. Eli, and Eli played.
Finn literally sat on the bleachers for, like, half of gym.
Well, Finn's a bum.
Bro had a 1v2 the entire time.
Did you win?
Yeah. All right, like that.
Bro just built different.
Yeah. It is Odysseus we're talking about.
Yeah.
Odysseus of badminton.
Odysseus of badminton.
He's got two rackets.
Yeah, yes.
Did you actually have two rackets? Because
sometimes.
Oh my god.
If I was playing
You're like
alone.
Tyrell.
Yeah.
Because for some reason, Tyrell is like physically incapable of playing with one racket. He either plays with two or zero. He either like he this no. The funniest part, this man made a legal serve by punting the birdie. He made a legal serve and scored a point off it. With no racket.
If I was on the opposing team,
like
I would have given up.
Football.
I would have given it up. I would have
punted
like,
a
nope.
birdie like a football and did a legal serve, got a score off of it.
I would have been like, all right, you win. You win.
This man, for some reason, he plays better when he has either no rackets or two rackets.
The Bro can only play in multiples of two.
Yeah.
Bro can only play even numbers.
He can only no.
Give him two extra arms. Give him four rackets. See what happens.
No.
Before.
No, the
I played
way
with
I
six actually. I'm pretty sure.
How are you holding six rackets?
It was like in between, like the Wolverine claws, but just rackets.
It's just Batman rackets.
Bro, Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
I mean, then again, if it goes all over you, you just all six of them just you're bound to hit it with at least one of them.
Yeah.
The thing that I hate about badminton is when they shoot it over my head and it's like, well, I've just lost this point because I have to like go, and then most of the time I just miss because of depth perception. There's a whiff.
My astigmatism was the killing factor for me.
Bro cannot see colors. Bro cannot see lights.
That's not what astigmatism is.
Is it when you can't see lights correctly and they like blind you or something?
It's yes.
Yes, because
I
think I have
can't see color. That's you.
Okay, leave
you're
me alone.
You're colorblind.
Colorblind. Yeah.
Isn't it when the light has like a line instead of like
it's where I believe it's something in my corneas. If I remember correctly, something in my cornea isn't connected properly. So light instead of having like the glow instead goes like the weird sporadic lines.
Oh, so I have that.
Like you were talking about, yeah.
I have that.
Our eyes just don't work.
Yeah.
Here, here.
Well, I can see that light like
12 eyes.
I see that light as like an orb.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But I mean like straight light.
Yeah,
like direct light.
Yeah, direct.
That's light. What it is. Not like an aura. Yeah, it's direct light is the problem. If it's deferred, then yeah, it's fine. But it being direct light is the problem.
So those are your hardest classes quarter.
Harrington.
Harrington.
What is that?
History.
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 She's
history.
Been out so much and just gives us a lot of work when she's out. And also, I missed 2 days.
Because you had like the black
plague. And I missed a test.
Yeah.
One of those days.
So I got to escape. I got to leave.
No, it was the week that he got the Black Plague and then he had to come back to like a missing quiz.
No, I got to escape because I had that class the first day of school and I was like, you gave me none of my classes and rearranged my schedule.
Well, man, it's not bad. It's just, like, the class is really funny.
Bro's like, we must suffer together, twin.
Yeah.
It's not really that much suffering.
It's just bad. It's just like a lot of
It's like grunt work.
Yeah.
It's just like a lot of grunt work and that's kind of it.
It's more tedious than like
that. That's the stuff that drives me crazy.
How was your first quarter of acting?
The class sucks, and we all got separated, so I can't sit with my friends.
Damn,
I sit with two random people.
Dang. That sucks.
Yeah,
that sucks, twin.
We can barely even choose our partners to work with anymore. That's how bad the class is.
Why? Everyone just screaming.
I mean, yeah.
Well, yeah, didn't she also have to ban the Trump voice?
Yeah.
Because everybody kept doing it?
No, that was just one person.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are mine and mine of my guests.
That's probably a good thing to get out of the way, the thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast.
The diciness.
Yeah.
The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the hosts and the guests. They in no way pertain to WTBR, Taconic TV Studios, or Taconic High School.
All right. So overall, how are we rating this quarter? Give us a good number grading.
I hate to say this, but like a 6 or the other number.
Yeah, 6.5.
Yeah, we're going to go with a 6.5.
There you go. I'm going to say like a 7.8.
I'll say I will say a good solid 7 flat. 7 flat and good.
It went well. It just sucks that one of our teachers just evaporated off the face of the earth.
Oh, I had a good quarter. Where'd my English teacher go?
Yeah.
I was like, man, I had a good quarter. And then Webster was like, I'm going to give you one assignment that's going to be like worth this much. And then I'm just going to give it to you. And we're not going to have much time to do it in class. And I was like, crap, because that was my birthday weekend. And so I've been stockpiled and I wasn't able to really get to it. And now I'm still not able to get to it because I'm stressed out all week. So
gotta love it.
I'm going to email him and be like, yo, dude, I need some either extra time or I'm going to hand it in on Thursday and be like, hey, buddy, sorry this is so late, but life happened. I'm not like itching and being like, man, what did Christopher Columbus do on 1492? He sailed the ocean blue, guys. All right.
This freaking guy across from me at this table.
What did I even do?
You know what you did.
So for our flat scores for the end of the quarterly review, we have a 6.5, a 7.8, and a flat 7.
And welcome back from the quarterly review. For our next segment, we have an interview with Julian with Mr. McQuinn.
Welcome to the interview. I am Julian, and today I'm with Mr. McQuinn, talking about his job as an archaeologist. So, hello, Mr. McQuinn.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. So, today we wanted to dive deep into what your previous job was, which is an archaeologist. So, is there any chance you can tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure, love to. So I worked in a field of archaeology called cultural resource management, which is kind of the easiest way to find a job in the States in archaeology. And what I did was I worked for a company that worked closely with engineers, government agencies, environmental consultants, and anytime that there were federal or state money or permits involved in a project, they would have to send out archaeologists to make sure there's nothing that is going to be construction.
What inspired you to become an archaeologist?
Sure. So when I was little, my dad was going to night school to become a computer programmer, and he was bringing home his textbooks and his work and stuff like that. And he took a couple of classes in anthropology, which is kind of the umbrella science that archaeology lives under. And I just remember being very interested in what he was learning and always kind of flipping through his textbooks and just kind of a lifelong love from there.
What tools or technologies are most important in modern archaeologist?
Sure. So I've been out of the industry for a minute. I last worked in archaeology in 2016. So a lot of stuff has changed in 10 years. Some of the projects that I've been involved in that used technology beyond just a shovel and screen were in the Pine Bush in Albany, New York. We found a stone tool that looked like a potato with a bunch of holes kind of bored into it and some grooves and stuff like that. And you could tell on one end there was really like a polish on the stone. So we sent that out for analysis, and somebody was actually able to scrape some of the protein from that stone and run it through some high technology microscopes and analysis. And what they found was that the protein had actually come from the wool on the hump of a bison. And it's sort of similar to sheep lanolin like you'd get from wool. But we know that there hasn't been bison in New York State in probably 8, 9, 10,000 years. So we knew that was very old.
Forever ago.
Yeah.
My next question is, what happens after artifacts are excavated?
Sure. So ideally, in the field that I worked in cultural resource management, we had to bring all those artifacts back out of the field. There's very careful paperwork that goes into making sure that what's called provenience is preserved, so that you know exactly what place that artifact came from, who dug it, what level it came from, how deep it was, what else was found with it. So they get all cleaned. A tool of the trade is an old toothbrush and a metal bowl. Legit, it's just how they do it. They clean them all off, they dry them, and then they go through a careful analysis, and we create what's called a catalog or an inventory. Months down the line, when we're all done with the research, we're all done with the analysis, the ultimate goal is to get them to a museum. If we're working with a Native American collection, we're often working through whatever state or federal agency we're working with and working with tribes to find an appropriate home for artifacts.
What's the most exciting thing you've ever discovered?
That's a great question. It's always a different answer every time somebody asks. I think when I think the one I'll share today is when I worked in Georgia, I was working in Atlanta looking for Civil War artifacts with a crew. And we were using metal detectors to look for bullets and things like that that you would typically find in a war. We found on the front lawn of a house 4 or 5 different bullets from 4 or 5 completely different guns, and they were not Civil War guns. Later on in that same part, in that same yard, we found shell casings from another 4 or 5 different guns. And we thought, well, this is very strange. But what I knew from doing research was that in 1906, there was a race riot in Atlanta. And the house that we were working on was actually the house of a famous white author who had employed black domestic servants in his home. And he, during the race riot, had offered security to some of these people. Instead of having to walk all the way across town during a race riot, a lot of them stayed with him for a couple of days. And what we found was a newspaper article that actually in great detail explained that a posse had chased a black man across this yard and had fired several shots at him. So what we found was actually evidence of that race riot and that one little snippet of an incident that happened.
So do you know if 5 different guns were shot at the same person?
We do. We were able to, again, you know, send these artifacts out to a specialist. They were able to find that the guns had come from a policeman's revolver. They had come from a very old, like, farmer's rifle, like almost like a .22, like you would use to shoot squirrels. And then another gun was something called a parlor pistol. Believe it or not, this was something that people would use to do target practice in their living room, shooting things off the mantle on top of your fireplace.
What's the most challenging excavation you've worked on?
Again, a question that has a different answer every time I'm asked. I very quickly became a project director, so I was given a lot of responsibility very early on in my career. And there was a cemetery that needed to be exhumed in my hometown of Rome, New York, and I took the lead on that project. Typically, when you're looking for graves, you are scraping away the top soil layers until you can see usually like a darker, it really just looks like a hexagonal coffin, right, in the ground surface. And that's when you know you've reached the coffin. In order to do that, you need 2 different colors of soil. You usually have a lighter soil that's on the outside. And then on the inside of the coffin, it's a darker soil. So it's pretty easy to find. In this particular site, the soil was very gravelly, very sandy, no difference in color. So I was kind of doing archaeology blind in very difficult soil conditions. It was raining all the time. There were sewer pipes that were going through the cemetery. So we were often having to deal with raw sewage on top of also trying to do some dignity and respect in removing these human remains. Very difficult, very stressful.
Sounds it. What advice would you give to someone just starting out as an archaeologist?
The field that I'm in is the one I can speak to, cultural resource management. And most of the time, if you're going to work in the States, like I said, this is the industry you'll work in. It is a difficult job to raise a family and find permanence in because oftentimes the entry-level jobs require you to travel quite a distance. So I know people who are what they call shovel bums. They're archaeological field technicians, but they typically travel all over the country all year long just chasing the wolves. My recommendation is if you're looking for a job that is more permanent, I would recommend getting involved in your local historical society. If you go to school for anthropology, go to Peru, go to Egypt, right? Go ahead and do those things, but also try to find a field school that is local so that you can learn local techniques and you can meet some of the people who might employ you in the future.
My last question for you today is, what made you shift from being an archaeologist to teaching at Taconic High School?
Awesome. So I worked with house museums in Albany and Troy, and during the summertime, they would do field schools for students, middle schoolers typically. And we, me and a colleague would spend a week at this house museum with a group of 14, 15 middle schoolers. And it was really like, we really let the students kind of direct the excavation. They came up with research questions. They looked at previous year's excavations. They looked at the maps and they kind of came up with their own research plan so that by Friday, after we had scrubbed all the artifacts with toothbrushes and we made little posters and displays, we had a chance to have family, community members, politicians come through these house museums and see what the kids did. And from there, I just fell in love with working with young people and history and social studies in general. And here we are.
Anything you want to say to our community from being an archaeologist?
I don't think so. Maybe dig deep and reach the stars. It's a little archaeology pun.
Well, I want to thank Mr. McQuinn for taking time out of his busy day to come talk to me and educate us about his amazing job as an archaeologist. Thank you, Mr. McQuinn.
You're very welcome.
And I hope all you have an amazing evening. And this was The Interview.
And it's great to have you back. For our next segment, me and Finn are going to be talking about space.
Space Talk, where you talk about the current, past, and present of space travel to get a deeper understanding of how space works.
That's one small step for man.
Hello and welcome to Space Talk. So, a lot going on in the world of space recently. If you know NASA's Artemis program, they just launched the Artemis 2 mission. The first Artemis mission was, I think, just testing out the rocket. There was no one in it. Pretty sure they sent just a rocket around the moon. This mission is, there's four astronauts. Reid Wiseman is the commander. Victor Glover is the pilot. Christina Koch is the mission specialist. And Jeremy Hansen is the second mission specialist. This mission was about them actually orbiting the moon. So orbiting the moon with people in it, which is the first time humans have gone back to the moon in over 50 years. Artemis 4 will be the mission where they actually land. So this mission, Artemis 2, is very similar to Apollo 8, which is the first time humans orbited the moon. So that's the parallel there that I like to make. So yeah, this was a very big mission. Was a very big mission for space travel. With our current technology, we're able to learn a lot about the moon that we haven't before. The astronauts were able to directly observe the moon and come up with a lot of different ideas of what the moon is like, a lot more than we had before. There is some great pictures of the moon this time around with our great cameras. So the crew, as I said earlier, Finn, you know something about the crew.
Fun fact, yes. This crew resembles the Fantastic Four from Marvel Comics because three are men, one is a woman. The leader of their crew is named Reed, which, if you know Marvel Comics, Reed Richards is the leader of the Fantastic Four. And they got their powers from going to space and getting affected by space radiation. So,
yeah. That's a great fun fact. So, more about the crew. This time around, we have more of a diverse crew. It's the first woman to go to the moon and the first black person to go to the moon. So it's great that they're finally diversifying the crew, getting some different people up there, showing the world that anyone can do it.
Yeah.
So the goal of the Artemis program as a whole is to establish a base on the moon to make traveling there easier and to set up a point for future missions to Mars, which who knows when that'll happen, but that's the goal of the program. I think it's great that we are finally exploring space again. Because spacecraft can only do so much. Sending people up there is probably the best way to get to know more about space. Like I said, this is the first time in over 50 years that humans have traveled to the moon. They haven't landed yet. They haven't landed on the moon yet, but once they do, the time difference between the Apollo 11 mission, which was when humans first landed on the moon, and Artemis 4 is a significant amount of time. What I like to wonder is why it took so long. I don't really know.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of media depicts space travel like any time there's an astronaut or anything, they're going to go to the moon, which just isn't true. But
no, because we have the International Space Station, which is the astronauts that go on the International Space Station, they do a significant amount of work up there.
Yeah.
So I applaud them in every way. I think it's the space station is like almost 30 years old now. It's something like that. I don't know exactly when it started, but still a relatively new thing.
But yeah, this mission in comparison to the, what was it, Apollo 8?
Yes, Apollo 8.
Yes, the Apollo 8 mission is just, the original purpose of us going to the moon was to learn more just about everything in the world. Like our whole reality changed when we learned that we could get there. And of course, it was during the Cold War.
It was that was like what I like to see the space race as is like humanity directing their anger towards each other to like make a leap in humanity as a whole. That's how I see it. Instead of fighting all these wars all the time, we actually made something happen.
Yeah. We used the Cold War.
We used competition as a reason.
Yeah, to produce something.
Yeah.
Really useful and quite enlightening.
Yeah. So obviously, with the over 50-year difference between Apollo 8, which is the first time humans orbited the moon, and this mission was a lot more detailed, and the astronauts were able to observe the moon more directly.
But they haven't landed. I think they're scheduled. They're not going to land this mission, correct?
No, not this mission. That'll be Artemis 4. Artemis 3 is more so testing commercial landers,
which is going to be really unique.
That's another goal of this program too, is to make commercial space travel better.
Yeah, which will be really unique to see, because imagine just like, hey, I'm going to go on vacation. Where are you going to go? The moon. Like,
yeah,
it's quite
crazy.
Unique.
Yeah. We have a while before we end up in that spot, but it'll be great if one day that is a thing.
Yeah. I mean, hey, I wouldn't be surprised. You probably want to go to the moon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think all of us do to a certain degree.
I don't know if I would. But, I mean, I feel like it would definitely be a really, really cool experience to just see and, well, experience.
Yeah. So on this mission, the astronauts were able to observe a solar eclipse. So they got some great pictures of that. And I think, I'm not sure if the Apollo astronauts orbited. I'm not sure if the Apollo 8 astronauts observed a solar eclipse either. I should have done more research before.
Yeah, I feel like it was more of their mission to land on the moon, so they were more just focused on that rather than...
No, Apollo 8, they orbited Apollo 11.
Okay,
they landed. Yeah. So that's... This mission's very similar to Apollo 8.
Yeah. Well, either way, the moon and the sun have to be in very specific places.
Yeah, I don't think they observed a solar eclipse on Apollo 8, so this might have been like the first time they've observed a solar eclipse orbiting the moon.
Which is really unique, and I saw the photo. It was quite beautiful.
Looks like an artist's rendition of interstellar space. The camera quality is so much better than what they had back then. So we're able to get a deeper understanding of like what the moon actually looks like. These cameras were able to actually capture like the stars and stuff like that too, which is not a thing that we had back then. You'd always just see the blackness of space in the pictures. I wonder when they actually land, what the pictures are going to look like when they actually land on the moon. Yeah. I wonder what they're going to be able to capture. It's going to be pretty crazy to see.
It'd be neat if they recreated the whole one small step for man. But with like seeing that as a higher quality, it would just be so unique to see. Just like comparing two footages side by side. And just seeing how much we have advanced would be insane.
Yeah. So regarding the rocket, I don't know too much about the differences between this and the Saturn V rocket, which is what they used in the Apollo program. But it's I think the rocket's called a space launch system. I'm sure it's way more capable of space travel and stuff like that. The capsule that they used to actually, when they were in space traveling to the moon, is about twice the size of the original one. This one is about the size of two minivans, and the first one was the size of like one or half of one. So they have a little more room to work with. Obviously, that's still a very small amount of room. I can't imagine traveling in space for days.
And with four people.
With the size of two minivans, with four people. I think the total mission was like 10 days. But they have a little more room to work with now, which is great.
It's really crazy to see just certain people, I mean, have now witnessed two space exploration missions to the moon in one lifetime. And for people like us, where we're on the younger side, we haven't experienced it at all. So just being here witnessing this moment of history is really unique.
Yeah, I mean, the only way we can experience the Apollo program then is watching movies like First Man and Apollo 13 and seeing the real footage from back then, which is, there's a way of upscaling old footage, but you know, the old footage is not very great quality.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And, that also reminds me, during the actual travel to the moon, there was, a live feed that you could witness. So I don't know if that's going to be saved or archived somewhere. Probably the internet's a vast place, but a GoPro?
Oh yeah, I've been watching the live stream every day. I've been watching the press conferences. They used a GoPro to film their on their way to the moon. Didn't it provide the greatest picture?
Yeah.
I mean, it worked. I mean, there's probably a reason why they had to use a GoPro, I'm assuming. Maybe a better camera. The excuse I heard was that there's only so much energy to go around, so they can only use a certain camera.
Which is fair.
But we got pictures. We got pictures that are really great, so I'm happy about that.
Yeah.
I didn't necessarily observe too many differences between the rocket launch of this mission and the did the launch in the Apollo missions. They were, it kind of went similar, I thought. Obviously, we got higher quality footage now, so we were able to see it in great detail.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and I saw a really unique perspective of the rocket launch on TikTok. Someone was in an airplane, and they were flying past the launch site when it happened. So you got to see the actual rocket like fly past them, and just the fact that we can just witness that stuff from all different angles now, due to just the growth of cameras and all sort of social media and whatnot.
Yeah. There were numerous complaints about the camera work of the mission, especially when the rocket was launching, which I can understand because some of the news sites I watched, like, they would cut to the crowd, like, mid, like, booster separation, which is, like, a very important part to see. And I just think that it's, like, why do we care about the crowd so much? Like, someone was complaining, like, bro, they're switching the shot to this guy eating a hot dog instead of showing, like, the booster separation, like, all the important parts of the launch.
I feel like that's, like, when you're watching, like, a footage of a live concert and it keeps cutting back to the crowd, you're like, I don't want to see the crowd. I'm trying to watch the performance.
Yeah.
Either way,
I still think it was good. Like, I don't think they could have had perfect camera work because it's been so long since we've had like this type of rocket launch. In NASA too, keep in mind NASA has so many more pictures to release, so many more videos to release. I saw a video on YouTube of like 100 different angles of the actual launch. So that means there's so much that we haven't, that the public hasn't actually seen. So the camera work that you see on live TV is not always going to be the greatest, even though those people are trained to do that job of camera work. But I don't know. I still think it was great. We still got to see it. We got to see it in way better quality than what the Apollo program had.
Yeah, and there's still plenty more to look forward to.
There is numerous more missions to look forward to.
Because as we were saying, there's going to be Apollo 3, or no, Artemis 3 and Artemis 4, which...
Artemis 3 will be testing commercial landers, and then Artemis 4 will be the landing. I would like to see if they're going to establish a moon base, if that's the plan, are they going to do it on that mission or?
I mean, I believe that is the plan, but I don't know when it will take place.
Like how long will they be there on the moon? That's like, how are they going to keep them alive while they're doing that is what I wonder.
Yeah. Because the first time we landed on the moon, it was just like a quick land down and then come back up. Take some samples, whatnot, stuff like that.
And then the subsequent missions were collecting even more samples and studying the moon.
Yeah, but I wonder, like, how are they actually going to tackle this? Or are they going to, like, try to make a stop, like a full stop on the moon, try to relaunch or something?
Yeah, I wonder. And with, like, the commercial space stuff, like, what's really their plan for that, I wonder?
Yeah, how are they going to get all the materials transferred?
Yeah, aren't they going to need, like, more space in the rocket, right? Like, they already built this rocket. I mean, like, what?
I mean,
how are they going to get the materials there?
Then again, things like the International Space Station do exist, like, bigger structures atmosphere, just in space in general, either way. And, well, there's also satellites and stuff like that, so depending on the materials they make it out of, could just be something that unfolds and then sort of just gets placed on the moon, or it could be a bigger structure like the space station.
Yeah. Regarding more about the Artemis 2 mission, I feel like this mission, we really saw the partnership between Canada and America take shape. Jeremy Hansen is the Canadian aboard the mission. I saw he had like a cool press conference from people in Canada. That was cool to see. But it's great to see the world sort of coming together, like with the International Space Station too. Like even Russia and other countries have a spot on there. Like it's cool to finally see the world coming together to like unite. Make things happen.
Yeah, to like unite and just learn even more. Because I mean, in the end, this is for everybody. I mean, there's so many things that we don't know, and once we do know them, it's not going to be like they're a huge secret. I mean, they're out there. It's the moon we're talking here. Like, it's space. It's all around us.
Yeah. All right. So, I really look forward to seeing what is the future of space travel. I think NASA has done a great job so far, obviously. There is a between the moon landing, I mean, between the Apollo program and this program, there is so much other stuff they have done with space, like the Mars rovers and all that. That's how we actually know that we're capable of getting to Mars, probably, is because of the Mars rovers. And there's even a spacecraft right now in like interstellar space, which is crazy how it's still floating out there somewhere. We're still getting information back. So the NASA has done a lot between the Apollo program and now, but it's very, very cool to see them actually going back to the moon. I am really looking forward to the future missions. So that concludes our segment, Space Talk. We'll see you next time. All right, hope you guys liked that. Now on to Dining Delight.
Dining Delight, bringing you the taste of the Berkshires.
Hello there, and welcome to Dining Delight. I'm here joined by Max.
Hello.
And I am Finn. And the past, like, week ago now? Yeah. We had a chance to stop at Espen Chinho Carioca, which is a local spot on North Street, right across from Hot Harry's. It is, oh, it's so good. It's amazing.
It's a Brazilian restaurant.
Yeah. Food is so good there. So, what did you get?
I got the chicken fingers espanchinos. They were fried chicken skewers. And I'll tell you, it was like the juiciest chicken I've ever had in my life so far. It was great. It was really fresh, really juicy. I have never had a fried chicken skewer before. I think that's really unique. The breading was great. And they served it with garlic mayo, which is their signature sauce there.
It's homemade, yeah.
Yeah, great, great, great to dip the chicken in that on this. When mayo's done right, it's great, great sauce.
Yeah. And you got a side with that, right?
Yeah, I had the garlic mashed potatoes. They weren't bad at all. It's just some garlic on potatoes with some bacon. But I probably wouldn't get those again, if I'm being honest. But it wasn't bad. Just not necessarily for me.
Yeah. I mean, hey, that's always fair. There's always the likes and dislikes, right? Hey, it's not bad, though. I might actually go try that next time because I love garlic. And mashed potatoes are pretty good. Yeah, so I got the Copacabana Beach, which is a grilled chicken, lettuce, tomato sandwich with their house-made mayo garlic, or garlic mayo, and cheese on a grinder roll. And I got mine without tomatoes, but no matter what, it is so good. Like Max said, the juiciest chicken. It is amazing. The sandwich fell apart right in my hands just because, like, it was so great.
Yeah, and those french fries. Those are some good french fries.
I love how they do their fries.
Yeah.
We didn't get their, they have another option of loaded fries. That's typically what I get, but I just wanted to go with the classic last time. So it was, just normal french fries, but their loaded fries are
just, you know, basic fries, but it's topped with melted cheese and bacon bits. So, yeah, definitely try that if any of you guys go out there. I also ordered some Brazilian limeade with my order. It contains dairy, so not always for everybody, but they do also have a regular limeade there. Can I say that was something? They have a strawberry lemonade there that I typically get because it's all handmade and everything. There's like sugar floating at the bottom still. It's delicious, but I think the Brazilian limeade is gonna be my new go-to. It's really good, very creamy. I go there often. It's a constant place for me. I know that it was your first time there, right?
Yes.
So what do you think? Would you go there again?
Yes, yeah. I would.
Yeah, so everyone there was very friendly. Really nothing to go wrong with there, right?
Yeah. As for the interior, it's pretty nice in there. They had some cool displays of Hot Wheel cars on the walls. Yeah. I thought that was cool to see. Not every restaurant has something like that. They had some soccer jerseys because, you know, Brazil is big on their soccer stuff. They had some soccer jerseys on the wall. It's great to see that.
It was empty when we went there, but it gradually filled up over time. And just, it's so nice in there. Just, it's nice and quiet and stuff. They have music playing. It's not that loud, though. And it's just, it's really nice to just chill in there.
Yeah, and you have a good view of North Street, too, out the window. You can check out what's going on out there as you eat.
Oh, yeah, and they have the little toothpicks that they put in their sandwiches have little Brazilian flags on it. I love it. I love that detail. But, yeah, overall, really good place, really good food, really good people. All around, I don't think there's a single way you can go wrong with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's phenomenal food, phenomenal atmosphere. It is a bit of a small restaurant, so on busy days, it will probably be pretty crowded in there, but weekdays, it's usually smooth sailing. It's pretty quiet in there, so if you just want a nice chill spot.
Yeah. I've been there on the weekends, and they get pretty good amount of people in there. But yeah, so final rating, what do you think?
I'm thinking it's a phenomenal restaurant with phenomenal food, phenomenal atmosphere. I better give it a phenomenal rating of 9.5 out of 10.
And I believe that I'm going to take that a step further and go a 10 out of 10. Because why not? You can't go wrong with it. And always support local businesses, right? All right. So if you are interested in checking out this location, once again, it is Espinchinho's Carioca, located on North Street, right across from Hot Harry's. Thank you for joining us on Dining Delight. We'll see you next time.
And I hope you enjoyed Dining Delight. So, I thank everyone for taking time out of their day for Up on Taconic. For more from us here at Taconic, check out our YouTube channel, Taconic TV. Thank you to all our listeners and have a great evening. Up on Taconic has been a production of Taconic TV and podcast produced at Taconic Studios in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. The show was produced using state-of-the-art Rode podcasting equipment and taped in April of 2026.